This is Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith.
The book is Life Reimagined, The Science, Art, and Opportunity of Midlife, and the author is Barbara Bradley Haggerty. Her name may ring a bell to many of you. Barbara was a longtime correspondent for NPR, and she's written for The Atlantic. She's also a woman in middle age who, given her experience researching and reporting, decided to thoroughly explore the experience of middle age. Thanks for joining us, Barbara.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks, Catherine.
So you write in your book that the 40s, 50s, and 60s are the most critical phase of life. So why is that?
Well, those years are both kind of the best of times and worst of times. And by that, I mean that people are at their peak. Basically, they're at their peak in terms of their brain power, their ability to negotiate, you know, office politics. You want a surgeon who's midlife. They're in great shape. They're operating at high performance levels. And yet, in those decades, especially in the 40s and going into the 50s, it is almost universal that people feel this slump of happiness. They call it the U-curve of happiness, where people basically reach the nadir of their happiness. They're most miserable at age 45. And then what begins to happen is people start to get happier, both naturally and kind of by thinking through what's really important in life. So what begins to happen is that around in one's 40s, one begins to kind of stop concentrating so much on climbing the corporate ladder, on success per se, on money, on the number of cars, that kind of thing. And they begin to pivot and think about two other things: other people, relationships, and also a purpose or cause that gives them meaning and joy. And when people begin to do that, they really find their footing through midlife and they get happier and happier right into their 70s.
So is this thing we've called forever a midlife crisis a myth, or is it just the wrong label?
It's actually a myth. Okay, so it came about back in the 1960s when a psychoanalyst named Elliot Jacques interviewed and researched people, men in their 40s, and decided that people get this kind of existential fear of dying before they can achieve all their dreams. And so naturally, the only thing that they can do is have a midlife crisis and get a sports car and a younger spouse, right? But in fact, when researchers began to look at this and psychologists began to interview people, they found that only about 10% of people in midlife have this existential crisis. 90% of us don't. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not a hard period. It's a period full of responsibilities, that we have kids and maybe aging parents and heavy responsibilities at work, a mortgage, you know, college tuition. And yet very, very few people actually experience a midlife crisis. So I would say it's a myth.
And so this was an interesting time for you to write your book, because that recession of 2008 comes up and the way that impacted people in midlife. Some people never recovered from lost jobs or ways that that impacted them economically. What distinguishes those who maintained their resiliency and in some cases thrived from those who just didn't?
You know, that was such an interesting time to look at this, because I actually got emails from hundreds of NPR listeners who talked to me about midlife, and many of them had lost their jobs and they were trying to find kind of their second careers. And it was hard. But the distinguishing elements for those people who were doing well were that they had people in their lives who either counted on them or believed in them. And usually it was both. So the single mom who lost her job but had two children, where she had to get up every day and find a job and had other people that she was doing this thing for, finding this next career for, that person was much happier than the person who was alone and not really investing in anyone else and not feeling invested in by other people. So really the key is to invest in others and create these relationships, because they give you a certain bottom, a certain net to help you deal with the slings and arrows of things like losing your job in midlife.
You describe when something happens like that, losing your job in midlife or some other test, basically, of your resiliency, it sometimes becomes something you call post-traumatic growth. Can you describe that?
Yes. So no one really wants post-traumatic growth. It's really, really unpleasant. But what happens? It's distinguished from just sheer resilience. Most of us are really, really resilient, and we bounce back to our previous set point of happiness. Post-traumatic growth is something a little more dramatic when people lose a child, for example, or maybe I interviewed someone who lost his leg. And what happens in post-traumatic growth is not that people automatically go back to their happiness set point, but they take this experience and invest outward in others. So a woman I talked with, she lost her son to cancer when he was 4 years old. She's now raising money for clinical trials to try to find a cure to this particular type of childhood cancer. That is post-traumatic growth, where you use the agony, the real sadness in your life, to invest outward and try to ensure that that awful thing doesn't happen to other people in the future.
The other thing that maybe happens to a lot of people in midlife is, if there isn't something traumatic, hopefully, is that sort of feeling that you're coasting towards retirement. But you yes. You show that the research really shows that autopilot is death. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. You know, I wanted to call the book Autopilot is Death, but my publisher didn't think that would sell very many books. But the fact is that when you are in midlife, you do a lot of things on autopilot because you're so busy. That's actually the wrong move. If you begin to take your job, your health, your relationships, your marriage, your children for granted, then you find that life becomes a little bit flat and desultory. And so the challenge at midlife is to inject kind of new challenges and new joys into your life. So I was talking to a woman named Kathy Utschneider, who is up at Boston College, and she trains elite middle-aged athletes. And what she says is that, you know, when you're young, there are a lot of milestones, right? You graduate from high school, you graduate from college, you may fall in love, get married, find your first job. There are like all these milestones. And then you hit midlife. And she says midlife is like one long run-on sentence, right? There are no periods or paragraphs to kind of stop the monotony of responsibility. And so what our challenge is in midlife is to put punctuation back into your life. Find a challenge, a hobby, maybe that you've wanted to do for a long time. Maybe you want to learn Spanish. Maybe you want to learn ballroom dancing. For me, I began to cycle competitively, and I had these challenges that I would do that weren't essential to my life, right? But they gave me joy, and they kind of put punctuation back in my life. And that's one of the things that people should do, is kind of try to find those things that give them joy, those relationships, those little, what I call a little purpose, little purposes that give them joy, as well as a larger purpose, as they just think about how do they want to spend the next 20 years of their life? Because most of us can't retire at 65, and frankly, we shouldn't, because that's kind of a recipe for a short, desultory descent toward death. What you want to do is think about, how do I live the next 20 years? What will get me up in the morning and give me kind of a purpose in life? And those are the challenges that we have at midlife. We need to think through those things.
So the other thing that happens to us in midlife a lot is things change about our bodies and even our brain. Our memory starts to fade a little bit, a lot of us feel like. So I'd love to talk to you about your brain, if you don't mind.
Yes. So here's the really good news, because don't we all think, you know, we forget a name or we can't remember that Hollywood actor, or like, you know, you just can't remember a word, and we think that, oh my gosh, we're losing it. In fact, midlife, especially your mid-50s, is the peak time of performance for your brain. And I found this through doing some cognitive tests and things like that. But basically, the bad news is that fluid intelligence, that Sherlock Holmes types of intelligence, you know, where you're solving puzzles really quickly, where you're able to have really fast processing speed, that kind of thing, that begins to decline after around age 30. But your crystallized intelligence, your wisdom, your vocabulary, your ability to see patterns, that all increases. And that's why you want, say, a 55-year-old surgeon and not a 35-year-old surgeon, because that 55-year-old surgeon has seen this before. When something goes wrong, he knows what to do. And in fact, around age, you know, in your early 50s, that is when we are operating at our peak. And so despite the fact that, you know, we think that we're losing our memories at age 50, in fact, we're not. And there's a lot you can do to keep your brain sharp. Pick something that you really like doing. Do you like doing crosswords? Do you like going to museums? Do you like learning another language? Pick something that you really like that will challenge your brain, because that will actually increase your memory and sharpen your brain, because it's something you like doing and you will do it.
If there's one thing you would recommend to people to make the most out of the midlife period, what would you recommend?
I would recommend finding a purpose in life. Let me put it this way. One very wise researcher told me, happiness is overrated. What you really want to do is invest in things that are meaningful in your life. That could be your kids. It could be your job. You know, it could be volunteering. It could be a whole number of things. But what you want to do is look for meaning as opposed to happiness, because meaning will bring you long-term joy over the decades. And so if there's any one thing I can suggest to people that they do is find out what they're kind of, what they're good at, what they love investing in, and make that your purpose in life. I can just guarantee that having a purpose is much better than searching for short-term happiness.
Barbara Bradley Haggerty is an author and journalist. Her book is Life Reimagined, The Science, Art, and Opportunity of Midlife. Thanks so much for being with us, Barbara.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Catherine.